How was that book received?
Well, I would say that originally it wasn't received red hot because of the climate. But I would say now, every time I go to a meeting, people say, "When are you going to put out a new edition?" So I feel in many ways vindicated. The only person who really gave it a good review was Maury Huggins, in the sense that he realized what I was trying to bring. Okay, he didn't agree with everything I said, but it was really lambasted by several people. To be perfectly honest, it sold out. Eventually they don't make massive printings, so that part. But it was not, I don't think, originally received. Certainly it disappointed me. But I feel quite gratified because it was, in essence, correct. And I say, I can go to a meeting, go anywhere now, and somebody says, "When are you putting out this?" This is hopelessly out of date. And in fact, I hope I was last long enough to get around to work it over. It's got to be worked over from stem to stern, so to speak. But I feel quite good about it, actually, now. Because, as I say, people just say, and they introduced me to the meeting, they introduced me as the author of this book. If you go back and look at some of the reviews that appeared in some of the journals, I don't think we can. Historians can go look it up. Okay. The only one I want to say is Maury Huggins, who didn't agree with me completely, but at least he saw what I was trying to say and wrote a reasonably objective. There were reviews of saying this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. He's back in the dark ages and refuses to recognize what everybody knows, that chains are regularly folded. Obviously, you can see him in the electron microscope. Well, that was a lot of incorrect stuff, and it's all clear now what the problem is and where the problems are. And unfortunately, I think we were subject for about a 15 to 20 year period to what might be called propaganda if we were in Russia, or advertising if we were in New York. And it was one of these things. For a long time here, I was sort of sitting alone with the 2-3 people in the world and saying that this stuff is just can't be right from experiment. And then Fleury had one theory, and then recently sort of wiped it all out with a recent theory. But the experiments just didn't add up. But it was very difficult to be heard, and there was a lot of it was very difficult to be heard for a long time.
What about when you would give papers at meetings?
Well, I'll just say you could give. You weren't invited to too many invited papers, but you can go, make a contributor paper, and they'd listen to you, I guess. But there were many a meeting in the '60s. Almost every that we were just excluded. Mm. I think that history will straighten it out. It's all straightened since now. But this was a subject of a real advertising propaganda. All that's bad, that can be bad, I think, about science. And there was meetings, there was a meeting in Germany in the '60s, and it was published in the Carlisle Zeitschrift, and somebody wrote me a letter and said, "Would you like to come and be a chairman of a session?" I said, "No, I can't come to Germany to be a chairman of a session, the subject I've spent 20 years and have things to say. If you don't think I'm worthy of making a presentation, I wouldn't come." I went to that Bristol meeting in 1960 that Frank and Keller had, and my time got chopped away and chopped away and chopped away until I got left about 5 minutes to talk. And now it was a very difficult period for me, and but I feel quite good about things now.
Where did the support come from eventually?
Well, I think the support, you mean from science or from
mm-hmm.
people?
Well, either one, yeah. Or both.
Well, I think that there was the approach that I was taking, that the properties did not allow this to happen, but this was a deductive thing, and this was probably one of the reasons. One, that chain statistics wouldn't allow this to happen. Then Fleury had one paper in 62, which I think was pretty much ignored by most of these people, that explained why you would form the lamella without having to fold the chains, and why you didn't have to invoke this nucleation theory of Hoffman's to do that. And then I think the real thing that sort of broke it open was neutron scattering. And then there were several papers, starting with George Wignall and people from ICI, who showed that the radius of generation did not change from that of the melt, and they looked at molecular weight relations. In other words, if you had a regular folded, if a lamella made a regular folded chain, it's a high school algebra to calculate what the radius of gyration would be, and they're nowhere close. I mean, by orders of magnitude, you couldn't explain that. So that, I think, I didn't do it, but I think that, in a sense, that's what turned a lot of people who didn't want to believe, and a lot of people just, you know, just not in polymers or crystalline polymers and all aspects, just look at things sort of super, you know, superficially. And so people were not too much convinced by the kind of experiments that we were done, but I think the neutron scattering was a little more dramatic and more direct. And so I would say, sort of retrospect, that that was probably, that started in the 70s. And it became quite clear that things were going to give.
In 72, you wrote a book, Introduction to Macromolecules.
Yeah, that was quite, that was a different kind of thing, yeah. That was a labor of love for a different reason. I've been concerned, and several of us have been concerned for some time, for the lack of introduction of polymers. I'm not talking about proteins and nucleic acids, but in a non-sexy way, so to speak, into even high school chemistry or undergraduate, certainly an undergraduate. In fact, it's the whole program now, the polymer division, to do this. And it used to bother, it bothers me, still bothers me now. And so one of the questions was, how can you sort of, how can you get students at a very young age, seniors in high school, freshmen in college, who are interested in learning, would pick up a book like this, pick up a book and read it, to learn that there were such things as polymers and macromolecules, that they were as interesting as argon or ethane, and they could be treated in the same kind of way. So this promoted it. And it was sort of a labor of love. I really enjoyed doing it.
How was that received?
That was received very well. That's been received very, very well. And I felt, well, that was very interesting. Several publishers I approached wouldn't touch it. I can't remember all their names, but that doesn't matter. But Conrad Springer has a friend on the campus and was visiting one day, and somehow word and he popped in to see me, and maybe, and then they were very much interested. It was just a pleasure working with Springer for Log in New York. Now, this has been, I think, well received. I mean, I don't want to brag, but I mean, all the reviews were favorable, very favorable, like a head swell in some ways. And it's been selling on a steady pace. It's not adopted as a textbook, but it goes. And it ran out of the first printing, and I just made some relatively minor changes, additions. I added a section on liquid crystal type polymers in the new work on, you know, fibers that come from that. And a couple of pages, as little I understand, about genetic engineering and DNA. Well, we talked about DNA in the book, so I talked about how they spliced it and put it together. And rather than just have them do some more printing, we figured just a little bit more effort. Now, that was quite different. That has been very well received by students and by faculty who teach general chemistry courses, introductory courses, and things of that sort.
I think you also have a paper in JChemEd which shows how you can relate this or introduce this into physical chemistry.
Yeah. And there's another, the ACS is putting out a book that is being edited, is not ready to go yet, I don't think, by Tom Lippincott at the Institute of Chemical Education in Madison now. And I have a chapter in that. It's just a amplification of that JChemEd paper. In fact, there's a lot of it is lifted straight from it. But there is a lot of work now going on this kind of thing, both in physical chemistry and organic chemistry. In fact, we have a seminar in Gainesville in 2 weeks at the ACS, local ACS meeting on this subject, so it's that part. Yeah, about on the paperback, I'm very happy with that and everything.
I come back, some of the notes I have here we've been discussing in terms of, again, these are comments taken from the nomination for the ACS Polymer Award, and I believe we probably covered most of these. So Van Okern's work has not been duly appreciated, but none of it has been refuted in any substantial part. Talking about your persisting tenaciously, moved by ephemeral fashions of the moment. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, well, you can almost figure out who wrote that. But you're a historian, I'll let you figure it out.
Okay. Well, what about your work here then in, what, 20-some, 25 years, I guess?
Yeah, well, as I say, we covered a good chunk of it in the sense that about, well, here a work has been primarily involved in, well, almost all on crystallization, but in different aspects. A good chunk of it has been what we just talked about, on the properties, the mechanisms, this is addressing this folded chain, regular folded chain business. And also gone over, we're not doing much in the last few years, but in the first 15 or so years out here, on contractile fibers, one of the reasons that motivated me to leave, and we did an extensive amount of work on keratins, the more work, collagens, and on muscle fibers, some of which is appreciated and some of which time will tell. And the only thing that we did out of what I would call the general crystallization area is some work on the conformational analysis of polypeptides. Give or take some piece of work here. But that's basically, I use the word crystallization in a very general sense, that we talk about contractility or structure or properties of a fiber. That's a crystalline entity. And so that's, as I, we did follow through until the last few years where my interests have changed back to the synthetic polymers on the contractile fibers and on the fibrous proteins, and one of the things that I got started on the Bureau standards and did an extensive amount of work on that, and got interested in some of the conformational problems on polypeptides. But we are, in the last few years, and I don't know how what the future holds for us, I've been pretty much on synthetic polymers. And just, I guess you might say, at this stage of my life, a tiny couple of cents.
What about your graduate students? Are any specific graduate students that stand out?
Well, I would first, I'd have to, I don't distinguish really between graduate students and postdocs. There, so okay. Yeah, I've had some really, I mean, I think that the some standout grad and postdoctoral students and graduate students, Wayne Matthijs, who is now moving to Dow Chair at Akron, had been in LSU for 20 years, 15, 18 years. Is quite outstanding. He came here and worked on polypeptide problems. Jose Fatu, who's in Madrid, in the Institute of Rubber and Plastics, came here. He and Kitamura, who is a professor at Kyoto, were my first postdocs. I never can remember which one came first, but they came within a couple of months of each other. Fatu is a major mover in Spanish polymer chemistry, and he's been following pretty much along the lines of the work we did here. Kitamura has really developed in the last 5 or 6 years and gone into solid-state NMR and done some very interesting and very important contributions. And he didn't do that here, but I just like to think that he learned how to think it and work from his work here. Those stand out in terms of people who are in academia. I haven't had a lot. I've had a lot of postdocs. I hadn't thought about this point prior to your coming here, so I have to stop it. I'm getting a little tired, so I don't know how my thinking will be. I have a student, Scott Zimmerman, who is a professor at Brigham Young, who is a very bright student. I believe he's in chemistry. I think biochemistry is part of chemistry there. He's in. I have a student, Roberto Benson, who's in the material research at the University of Tennessee, just moved from the University of Utah, in material science and not in chemistry. In terms of people in academia, I've had. Large number of people in industry here and abroad. I have a student in ATO in France, Michel Glotten, a recent postdoctoral, who's going to be very important to French industry before too long. I have a postdoc named Armand Dekmazian, D-E-K-M-A-Z-I-A-N, who left here about 4 or 5 years ago, heads up a major group at Exxon in New Jersey, at the Linden Labs. I had a postdoc in NMR, Rich Komorowski, K-O-M-O-R-O-S-K-I, who went to industry working on NMR and polymers for a while, had a responsible position at Goodrich, and has left or in the process of leaving to do NMR imaging, and he's going to be a professor at the University of Arkansas Medical School. Student Ricky Allen, who's at 3M. I have a lot of people in the industry. I just can't try and keep track of where they all are. They change around a lot. I have a very good student named Gary Stack, who is at the Naval Research Laboratory branch at Orlando. They have a lab there doing concerned with sound underwater problems, and they've just gotten into polymers, and he's doing very well there. He's one of the better PhDs we put out of this institution. I have a student, Harry Lader, L-A-D-E-R, who's used to be at DuPont and actually postdoc with Bill Krigbaum, is now with the Nordson Corporation in Cleveland or somewhere in Ohio. They do machinery. They make a lot of machinery for polymer processing. That's what he got into. We've gotten heavily into gels, and the fellow who started as I've got a PhD here, Charles Edwards, is what used to be called General Tire. I don't know what they call it, Genco or GenCorp or something like that. They changed their name. Does that give you more or less?
Yeah.
I don't have 100 students or anything like that. Very good student from Turkey named Ertugoz, E-R-G-O-Z. He did some classical work here on crystallization kinetics, very classical, I think. And he's manager of some rubber manufacturing plant in Turkey. I don't know the exact, off the top of my head. I don't want to slight anybody, but I think we're...
Is there anything else that is on your list
I just made some notes from your list, and I just wanted to hope I made clear. I think that what is important historically, one of the things that ought to be clear, I think what we might discuss for another moment, is this problem, is the scientific problem of this fold the chain thing, which I think is a good time to talk about it.
Okay.
I think I've said, I just want to sort of emphasize in the editing that it is an important thing, is I think the issues are pretty well decided now. And it was, since this is a sort of my history, it was personally a very difficult, harassing sort of situation for a long time. That the problem, it persisted for 20-some years, is not the question. The question is that there was, for a long time or other, a difficult personal time for me to keep working, and I do appreciate, I don't think I should mention names, but several companies that kept me on as a consultant, picked me up as a consultant, kept me on, had enough, thought I could help them, despite the fact that I think I would say, frankly, in the early 60s, that our work on crystalline polymers was probably held in disrepute. I mean, I think that would be a fair statement to say. And I think my book came out at that time, and it got if you just somebody go look at it, and I feel quite good about it now in terms of saying, I'm not bragging, but I get introduced as the author of the book, and everybody tells me how much they read it and how much they want the new edition. But I do think this is, for historians, it was looking at this in a little more, can look at it from all points of view, not just from mine. It was a very difficult period. I think it was a very bad period for science, because it was a good lesson, I think, of how controversies in science should not be settled. They should not be settled by political innuendos, by keeping people off of programs, I don't want to go through all the harassment at the Bureau of Standards. That's not the way. They just get the solutions just get delayed. And I think this is the point I would really like to make, that as you folks look at these things over the different aspects, that there's very standard sort of ways that scientific controversies have gotten set for time for time immemorial, and it doesn't have to get involved in depriving people of things to do and things of that sort. When we look back at it, perhaps it was a very hard experience, but I think the science is straight, and that's what's important. So, and I was doing other things also, so I kept myself from going completely crazy. So you may have some things to ask me. I think that this is basically, I check over my notes I made from your letter. But if I made sense to you, this is basically what I wanted to.
No, I think it was fine, and I guess what we'll do is close at that point then. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Well, thank you for coming down. You might want to edit, put this in some other place, but I think that this, I think, is a very classic example of how two scientific gentlemen can have a major in the same institution, in the same department, can have a major, major disagreement and still go out to lunch and enjoy each other's company and still have the problem settled in the proper way. And what I'm talking about, anybody who's familiar with the period of 1949-50-51, is the intramolecular excluded volume effect, where Fleury had one position and Debye had the absolute 180-degree opposed position. And you could have seminars where they would argue and their students would argue and discuss these things. It might have got hot and heavy, but nothing personal, nothing vitriolic. And I've seen many a time when Debye and Fleury would argue in the morning and go out to, and I'd be there when they'd go off to lunch together. And it got settled, and they had tremendous admiration for each other's intellectual and personally, and the problem got resolved. Which way it got is not important, but that's the way I think things. And this is something I learned way back in 1950, and I think that's the way gentlemen and scientists settle their things. They had very deep-seated disagreements on whether the excluded volume effect went asymptotically with molecular weight, it continued indefinitely with molecular weight, and it had very significant, more than an egotistical argument, it had many practical effects on how you interpreted almost all solution properties of polymers. And it took a few years to get straightened out, but it got straightened out. So I thought you might want to put that in, but I think that's, to me, a classical way.